What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Now that I know I deserve more, I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Made up my mind, I'm on my grind. My time to shine, you hit my line. I press decline, no time for that. I'm moving forward and right now. You're in my past, I've come too far to turn back now. Not going back, I see that everybody's sleeping on me. They really gotta see it to believe.
What's up, y'all? It's Dr. Jamila T. Davis.
And Tara Wallace.
And this is I Love Me More podcast. So let's get into it, y'all. Oh, baby, this is definitely an episode you want to tune in for, right? So, you know, I'm formerly incarcerated. She formerly incarcerated, too. Is that right?
Yes, it's
right. All right. I did damn near a decade in prison, and you did about what?
3.5.
Okay. I used to be inmate 592-53053. Do you remember yours?
4299-037.
Okay, and now today I'm Dr. Jamila T. Davis, and you are?
Dr. Topeka K. Sam. All
right, so let's get to it. I love it, I love it, I love it. So my sister is the boss of the bosses when it comes to advocacy work, y'all, for formerly incarcerated people. Sis is doing her damn thing. She runs a nonprofit organization, right? And your agency, they raised about how much last year?
Total $11
million. $11 million, right? Mm-hmm. And how many employees you got right now?
Now we have 16.
16, but you used to have about
26, but you got to cut the dead weight off.
I know that's right. All right. So she does programs, guys, for formerly incarcerated women and justice impacted women across the country. Programs that I've even taken myself. Right.
And we pay. We pay.
You definitely pay.
We definitely pay for all of our programs.
That's
people
right.
Take them and they get paid to take them.
You get stipends for the program. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the programs I took, I got like $9,000 stipend for a Monday night program that I had to participate in.
Shout out to Arnold Ventures, Chanel Foundation, and the NFL Foundation for supporting our work.
That's what's up. And it was a cohort that taught us about advocating and becoming lobbyists as formerly incarcerated people. And I was interested in that information. So I had to, even though I got the hookup, I had to take the little, I had to write out my little answers and, get approved to be a part of this program. And it was life changing for me. And that's when I really knew how dope my sister was, because I'm like, yo, they not just talking, they putting this work in out here.
It's true. And she did do that. I will say, she was like, we need to highlight your work. You doing so much good work and people don't even know. So that's one program. We have 6 programs. We have 4 hubs in New York, Maryland, Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana, and now Miami. So excited about that. Maryland,
yes.
Prince George's County, Maryland. We're opening a house next month. We also do rapid rehousing with HUD, which is huge because women who are survivors of domestic violence, we can help them pay their rent for up to a year at market rate rent. So it's not just, you know, getting a little spot at income, you know, rate. We can give someone a good home if they need to leave a situation that is unhealthy for them.
Which is so necessary, y'all. Yeah. So first off, you know, Tara and I have been talking about the many relationships in our life that have drained us. And I know that y'all listening can really relate. Is that right?
Absolutely.
That oftentimes we put people before ourselves. And it actually could be draining because what is supposed to be for you, you're actually giving it to someone else. So this podcast is all about breaking free from toxic relationships. Is that right?
That's correct. That's romantic relationships. That's in the workplace, friends, family. Wherever you can identify a toxic relationship, that's what we're going to be talking about.
And we're going to be talking about getting free, y'all. So many of y'all know my story. I actually spent a little bit close to, well, a little bit over 9.5 years. So it's close to 10 years in prison. And it was a physical prison. And a lot of people be like, girl, I don't know how you did that. And I be looking at y'all like, girl, you still in prison and you just don't know it, right? So that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about getting free. We're going to be talking to people. We're going to be talking about our own personal stuff. So this podcast, y'all, y'all got to get comfortable, all right? Put your comfy clothes on. Because we're going to be talking about the stuff that people don't generally talk about. Is that right?
Exactly. The real stuff.
Because they be hiding behind a mask.
Yes.
You know, it be IG time. Everybody cute and together. And we got it all together for the gram. But then deep down inside, life don't really be like right.
It don't be right. No, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what I love about Tara is that she's a real one. She had a situation that went crazy on television and people began to judge, but people wasn't really thinking about what's in their own closet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times, you know, people are in relationships and they're putting out a front. Very particularly, I have a group of friends and we were all sitting around talking, right? Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about real stuff and I was just blurting things out as I always do. And they were sitting there saying, these are things I could never say in public, like how I really am struggling. How being a mom is very difficult. I'm like, but it's a group of women. You're there to support each other. How are you supporting something when the truth is not even on the table?
That's real. Because a lot of people don't even know how to keep it real or how to be real mm-hmm. because they ain't real, yo. You know, so we're going to be talking to some real people right. that is ready to talk about some real things right. and that are ready to just share their truth. And we share our truth not to just be talking, but to heal. Right? Absolutely. Because if I didn't tell my story, I know my story to many is inspiring, but it gave other women the courage to be like, hold on, I was, you know, incarcerated too, and this happened to me, and oh my goodness. And as we know, a root to a lot of things that happen to us is trauma.
Right. All right?
So this show is all about the trauma, but not just talking about the trauma. We're going to get the trauma-informed care. Okay, so we're going to inform you about what you need to do. So we're going to have therapists on. We're going to have real people on. And by the way, we got a real person right now. Is that
we right? Sure do. We have a real person right now.
All right, so let's give it up for our first guest. First guest. You heard that right. Our first guest. My girl, Dr. Topeka K. Sam. Give it up.
That drum roll, please.
Yes.
What an honor to be here on I Love Me More podcast, the first. Not the second.
The first. But the you first. Got that right.
It is a great honor, and I'm so happy to be here with my beautiful sisters. So thank you.
That's what's up. So first question, who are you? I don't even want to talk because if right. I talk about you, you know what I mean? I'm going to give you every accolade in the book. So just for our viewers, tell folks who you are.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you do that because when we think about I Love Me More, I still struggle, even within the love that I have for myself, highlighting all of the things that I've done. And I've done a lot of great that I know, mm-hmm. but it has been so hard just to stand in front of that.
All right, we'll so talk hold on, about hold on. We're going to get that together right now. That's what this is for, right, sis?
Back it up.
Yeah, so let's talk about who you are, and I want you to be comfortable and confident in the beautiful black skin that you're in, and tell us who you are and your accolades, and go ahead and roll them out. We got time.
Okay, well, first, okay. I am Dr. Topeka K. Sam. I am a daughter. I am a sister of many. I am an auntie to many. I'm a godmother. I am a friend, a great friend. Not often to myself, but I'm a great friend to others. I'm an entrepreneur, a social activist. I am an everything lover of sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I believe that sisterhood is important. And without it, I don't think any woman can truly really get to their pinnacle, because we can't do anything in this life by ourselves. And we damn sure can't do it without sisters. But professionally, I am the founder and CEO of the Ladies of Hope Ministries, whose epic vision is to end poverty and incarceration of women and girls globally. I am the co-founder and chief visionary officer of MyFresh, which is a fintech company. I am the CEO and president of TKS Ventures, LLC. I am also the president of Epic Detroit, which is a partner in Torian Detroit with Angela Yee, Jasmine, and Jessica, where we just purchased a 30-unit affordable housing project in Detroit. So yes. Super excited about that. So opening up my, you know, development portfolio soon. I own real estate. And I mean, I think my greatest gift is just being a lover of God and moving in the spirit and in my purpose.
Y'all heard that. So hold on, let's give y'all the tea.
She just rolled out the whole resume.
Baby?
I was like, oh, and more. Oh, and more.
Uh-huh.
There is, well, I didn't say all the awards and all things, but
that's good. That's you gave us a good, yeah, strong basis.
It felt good. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to truly just share that way.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
So y'all, you know, it hit me. Why is Topeka K. Sam one of our first guests? First of all, let's talk about where we met each other at. We're going to give him the tea. Where did I meet you, Shug?
You met me in Danbury Federal Prison when I just came in. And I'll never forget, I was walking down. I used to say, I always wore lipstick everywhere I went, even in prison.
Lipstick in prison is contraband. So how the hell did Topeka K. Sam, her first day, the first day I saw her, okay, the godmother of the prison, I see this girl with her little, and then you had altered clothes on the first day, like, where did you get the little tight pants?
Well, somebody has set me up. They told somebody else, you know, I ain't giving no names, but somebody has shared that I was on my way to Danbury, mm-hmm, and there was a sister, Sherilyn, shout out to Sherilyn, she was waiting for me. And so when I got there, she had all my stuff together, you know, and then I met Missy Trigg on the way there and had, you know, with the shoes and told me how to navigate to get the job. And then I met you in the hall, I believe.
Baby.
And we just connected. I think it was just the energy, what we saw in each other. And it's interesting because everybody has the same clothes on, mm-hmm, right? Everybody's going through a similar situation. I was just so happy to be in a camp because I had just come from 11 months in a county jail, which was like the worst. And so the fact that I was walking free down a hall without handcuffs and shackles after 11 months, for me, I was just happy.
Well, honey, she was happy, but we was like, who's Sugar Spice walking through the door? I mean, y'all had to see it. That thing strutted from side to side with that big, bright red. I'm like, what?
Where did you get that?
Yo, and the thing about it is that some of the girls in the camp was hating, but I wasn't hating on it. I was like, who's Spicy? Right. I said, is she day one? Right. Could come in with the altered tight pants and, you know, right, the look. I need to know her. She like, needs to be a part of my team. Yo, what up? What's your name? Come in for a second. Let me holler at you. Oh,
she wow. did. She did. And
I never told me you doing that.
No, she did. And just started schooling exactly me immediately is. Because I really didn't know what to expect, you know, at all. I knew coming from that county jail now into the federal prison, it was a different environment, different culture, different types of women. So I just did not know, but she schooled me and gave me the rundown. And when somebody takes you kind of under their wing, when you get there, then certain people will know how to treat you.
Okay.
So immediately they treated me like, you know, I was carte blanche because she took me under her wing. Okay. And that was even staff, you know, it was the same. So it was almost like I had like a level of privilege coming in the door because of who I connected to.
Okay.
So yeah, she definitely connected to me and I loved her. Right. So we're going to talk about something, because we talked about talking about something else, but then I'm like, no, we need to talk about something, which is us. So what y'all don't know is me and Topeka just started back speaking to each other.
Yep.
It's about a year, a little bit now, over a year. I think it was August of the last year,
yeah,
I got, well, I'm gonna go into. Ooh, this gonna get.
It's like memory lane. I don't even have anything to say. I'm just like, wow.
What? No, no, no. You are mediating in a minute. Yeah. So get ready, sis. Okay. You gonna have a lot to say in a minute because Tara like, don't know none of this, y'all.
I mean, the way this was set up down this memory, I'm like fascinated. I'm like, well, then what happened? What did she say? Well, where did you get the lipstick from?
Yeah, sometimes you just don't tell all your secrets now. Okay. I can't tell that.
So, y'all, just for me, with women, I love women. I love black women, right? But for me, all my life has just been this thing, right? I get the loving on people, and I get hurt, mm-hmm. right? I'm a lover. Yeah. And y'all know me, because y'all know y'all my friend. So, y'all know I'm a passionate. I will kick your ass. Yeah. Over my friend. Don't play with my friends. Don't talk about. Don't. Nah. If I'm in, I'm in. So I'm like in or out. Right. Right? So I met this girl. Right. First of all, tell them why you went to prison. Because you know somebody going to be like, now why y'all. You know. tell them a little bit about how you got there. Then we going back into our little stuff.
So, and I think this particular conversation, I think the way I will share this story, mm-hmm. which I haven't in this way, mm-hmm. is fitting for the I Love Me More mm-hmm. piece of it.
Okay.
Right. So I would say struggling to find identity and a sense of connectedness and belonging to my black women, to my sisters, has been a struggle that I've had my entire life. And so I say that because being raised in an all white neighborhood as an only black child, knowing I was a black girl, which was never an issue, that I always felt that I was missing something because I didn't see someone that looked like me. Yes, I went to the city on the weekends and, you know, went to Harlem School of the Arts and I was around other black kids, but that was on the weekend, right? So most of my
days. So explain that because people don't understand. So your parents are from where?
So my father is from Harlem. My mother is from the Bronx.
Okay.
And they had met and married now over, it would have been 60 years. My father passed 3 years ago. So they were married 58 years in total. And they wanted something different for the kids than they have for themselves. So they were raised in poverty. They wanted to work hard to have the things. So they were franchise business owners. They owned restaurants. And they built their house from the ground up in Long Island, in Manorville, which was all white neighborhood. Now, they went to Dix Hills first. But when they got there and the woman opened the door, so they were black, she never opened the door at all.
Wow.
She looked through the blinds, saw it, and just kept it moving. So they were like, well, our money is green. We can buy what we want and do what we want. And so that's what they did. They went further east, built their house, and that was it. So for me, while I was born in Harlem and went out there once the house was, you know, built, this was my life. I thought everybody had a big backyard, a big pool, and all the things. I didn't know. I knew ours was bigger than some of my friends, but it didn't matter. I just thought this is the way everyone lived, right? And while I came into the city and they had a place in Harlem, I still wasn't allowed to hang out on the block, right? So I didn't really know what was happening. You know, while I knew what was going on a block or two because I would listen, you know, I was always really inquisitive, I still wasn't allowed. My parents were really strict. And so this went on, you know, just life. And I was happy. I was given every single thing that you could ever want. You know, I knew about all of the fancy stuff, the big stores, the brands and all that, because that's the way that I was raised. But when it was time for me to go to college, I chose an HBCU. Morgan State University in Baltimore.
Okay.
And I did that because, well, one, Baltimore was far enough from home, but not too far.
Not too far, yeah.
And one of my mom's close friends, who I called Aunt Maddie, she went to Morgan State University and raved about it. So when I did my little college tour, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. So I chose Baltimore. And I got there, and it was another culture shock, right? Mm. So while I'm excited because I'm here with my sisters, you know, they like, you talk like you're white. Well, you're pretty to be dark-skinned. And I'm like, well, what does all this mean? I'm calling my parents, like, what is going on? Like, why are people talking to me like this, you know? And then I find myself trying to fit in. Like, now I want to talk like they're talking. Or I need to, you know, my swag needs to be a little bit different because I just want to be accepted. And this is really the first time I started dating. You know, I had little boyfriends that I snuck around with before, but now I'm on my own. And I started dating the guys that would come up to the campus. And, you know, the ones that, like, you know, want to know about the girls and who are not from Baltimore, that from New York. So, you know, they find us. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like they pray. Mm-hmm. They come on the campus. They find us. They found me. And, you know, like, where you from? I'm like, Harlem. Remember, I told you my parents at the spot. So I say Madderville because nobody would know, you know. So I'm acting like I'm down and I know what's up. And they're bringing me around everything. And so I'm just watching. And I'm watching them sell drugs. And I'm getting fascinated, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents, I had a Mercedes. My parents gave me a Mercedes, but I didn't see kids that looked like me that were driving big cars, you know, or always had cash. Like, we had credit cards. You like, so it was all different. And so, you know, now I'm like, all right, they keep getting locked up. You know, I'm down. I'm the down girlfriend. So, you know, I'm going. If they got kids, I'm taking them on the visits. I'm doing all the things. But I'm like, they're stupid. Like, this is business. Why do they keep going to jail? Like, I see what you're doing wrong. So now I find myself thinking I can do it better. And then I found myself selling drugs.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis, and I got a special offer for you, right? It's my gift from me to you. You want to level up? You want to manifest the life of your dreams? Well, I'm going to give you a piece of the plan, right? It starts with my Manifested Now vision plan. So follow me. It's actually the template that I use each and every year to get into my goals, my dreams. And unlike a vision board, I actually put this document on paper with goals and dreams and plans of who I want to be and what I want to become. And now you could do it too. It's time to level up, y'all. It's time to be the best you that you can possibly be. And I'm going to give you the plan. And best of all, I'm going to give it to you for free. Click the link right here. Download today and level up. Make sure you share the results with me. This is the exact plan that I've been doing for the last 4 years. And each and every year is taking me higher and higher. And I pray it does the same for you. So this is crazy, y'all. You got to stop and pause right there. Right? This is the good girl, because it's kind of like my story, you know, that some of you guys have already heard, who comes from the privileged household with the parents that got the bread. And who's she looking for? Ray Ray and them. All right, keep going.
Ray Ray and them. And a few blacks and a few others, but yeah, all of them. And so this kind of went on, and the first time I got arrested, it was like, all right, I bailed out.
Hold on, did you drop out of school or did you stay
in school? No, I was still like staying in school. I wasn't in school full time. I was staying in school to save face. So my parents knew I was still in school.
Okay.
Right. So they weren't really paying attention because they felt, oh, she's good. We know she's the good kid. She's no problem. She's going to do what she has to do. So I had started living these different lives.
A double life.
All right, probably triple, you know.
A triple life,
you know,
y'all.
Like you have your street, you have your college friends, and you have your family. And I realized at 35, when I was finally incarcerated, that my friends had told me, who had been in my life for a very long time, like, we didn't even know that you had brothers. Or they had never met my parents. And yet I had met their entire family.
Wow.
So it was like I had designed my life, unbeknownst to me, to separate everything. And I was just running. And I was showing up differently.
From sis, if you really think about it, like, what drew you in? I knew what drew me in, but what drew you into the other side?
I was running to. It wasn't that I was running from.
Mm.
So I was running to this. It was a feeling of power. I took power as love, right? And I think it goes back from just being the way I was raised. You know, this dynamic between myself and my father, you know, and it was, you know, I'm a woman or girl. This is the way I'm supposed to be. I'm not supposed to speak back. I'm not supposed to do these things. Everything is yes, sir. My father was very strict. And so when I had gotten to relationships, no man could tell me anything. Mm-hmm. You couldn't say to me anything because I'm not listening to you. I don't have to listen to you. And as a matter of fact, I could do what you're doing better. And so it was this idea in my mind that as long as I had money, there was power. Mm. And men, obviously, because it had gotten to a point in my life where I ended up being the connect. And so men, they just wanted to be with me because they were trying to get to the connect. Right? Like, when I look back and I really think about those things, I'm the one that they're going to buy 10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
Yo, we skipped a whole line. And I'm like, yo, line. I don't know if this is going to be on the TV special or I Love Me More. Right? But in the interest of keeping it right here,
yeah,
right, and breaking it down, and Tara, you can help me with this. We just heard you say you went from Mandeville, Long Island, down to Baltimore, messing with your first hustler boyfriend to... We get to 10-20 key, what? To be in a connect. Mm-hmm. That's crazy right there. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it was every step. And again, I'm not the person, I mean, much like you, right? Like, we are business women. We're entrepreneurs. So we see an opportunity, we seize it. And I remember how I ended up getting it to a point where I was selling 100 kilos a week. And by the way, I was getting it from my connect with no money. So I didn't have to come. You know, you hear the stories people have to, I didn't do any of that. You know, I went and I was getting a connect for my man at the time, which is really funny. And I got the connect for him. And when the connect finally came with the drugs, he didn't have the money. So he told the connect, look, whatever you bring, I got you. I'm going to get you the money. And the connect came with 100 keys and he did not have the money. So he calls me. And it was almost
hold
like.
Hold on. Is that how you really got into the game?
That's how I really got in.
Oh, wow.
So he calls me and it almost sounded like he was about to cry on the phone. He was like, yo, these people came and they got all these drugs. They don't want to give anything up. So I rented a car and I drove from Baltimore to Fort Lee, New Jersey. Remember, there was a little Hilton Hotel. I think it might still be there, right over the bridge. Right then I met with them and they're like, what's up? Because I, you know, there's a whole nother show probably.
Okay.
But there's a whole nother way of how I even got to the connect from going to California. My homegirl connected me to a man. You know, here's the homegirl connected me to a man who connected me to
men. Connect. Don't even really realize that. Mm-mm. So we know this. I know, Tara, some of this might be a little foreign to you, but
I did go to HBCU. I was like right there, and I know, you know, and you know, I grew up in a strict household, and I get to college, and it really is culture shock because you see all these people, but then. I got a job at the mall.
So the mall is a little bit different, but let me just
I worked at Lerner, New York, you know? So,
you know, I still got suits from Lerner's, okay? It's okay. But this is what I'm going to say to people that don't know. We've been behind a wall, so we get to see a lot of people who look very similar to us, right, in regards to chicks are the ones that put dudes together.
And put them on.
Because dudes don't really, like, another dude ain't going to really give you the connect. Right. No. Unless it's your cousin or your homeboy from forever. But to usually get new connections, it is the chick. Mm-hmm. You know? And I know that I kind of got in the game in a similar way from my boyfriend cheating on me to be with another girl that got her own money. So I got in the game to show him I'm going to go get my own money too. So I kind of got that same power thing with you. And then I found myself getting connected because my girlfriend got a boyfriend. He doing his thing. And then I'd be like, yo, your boyfriend need to meet my boyfriend. And then he got the keys. And we so vicariously, you get into this underworld of business. And then you start to feel good because your dude start looking at you like, yo, shorty the plug. And it just goes from there.
But I mean, yes. And I just remember, you know, when I finally was like, okay, I realized I'm going to be the one to have to do this. That I knew it was going to go all bad. And the irony was that at that time, what happened in the relationship.
Hold on. Did you get the 100 bricks, though?
Yeah, I got the 100 bricks.
I know that's right. How many days it took you to move that, sis?
Probably about a week.
Okay.
Yeah, about a week the first time. Right. But then after that, it was good. But I had to reach out to a bunch of homeboys that I knew, right? Because I had been hanging out and I was in the, you know, just I was one of them girls. And I was telling them that I had a connect, you know, like, what's up? And I did not want to be involved, but I was like, okay, these people came from all the way across the country and Mexico, and I need to get these, you know, because now I had to prove something to me. Yeah. It wasn't even about him. And so while I kept trying to put him in front, and I wanted people to say he was the connect, he was going around, you know, doing what guys do sometimes, sleeping with women, lying. He even told the girl he was sleeping with that I was the connect. She called me to let me know she was sleeping with him and told me, well, since he told me you was the connect, maybe I should be sleeping with you.
Whoa.
Yes. Bugged out.
Mic drop. Wow. That's crazy.
Yes. Real. I mean, true story. So it's like, you know, and when you are getting so much money, a lot of things you're not even really paying attention, right? A lot of things you don't really see what's going on because now I'm engaged in this business and I'm in a business with a bunch of men and the cartel. So you have all these different things that you're worrying about. And I didn't even really know, you know, I had my little setup, you know, a few, you know, women that I worked with that I trusted that was close to me that would, you know, pick up money.
So are you still
money,
in school?
Like,
are you got the cartel working while you at the school? No, or what?
The school is over.
Okay, now the school is over.
I'm like,
so now you in.
But yes.
Because the money's also coming in, so you get hooked in.
And I work at a full-time job also. So my family just thinks that I got a job and now this is a career and now I'm good. And I felt
baby,
like,
this is a whole nother episode. Yeah, so hold on. You said them four lives. So you got the corporate job, right? So now you got the corporate job, your school friends, the regular friends, the boyfriends, the cartel.
Yes.
All
the things.
Wow.
And you don't, when you're in it, you don't realize you got so much stuff going on. And the irony is, though, now, because I'm in so much now, you know, people are like, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, I've always kind of been able to manage and do so many different, delegate and do so many different things, multitask, right? It's a transferable skill. And so because of that, that's why I have the capacity to do the things that I do now. I just didn't realize then what it was that I was doing. You know, I didn't do, I was doing what was necessary to stay out the way and to stack my money, you know? But then there is, again, me wanting to get the love from this man. And him, you know, things happening, him taking money. I'm looking up and $300,000 is just missing out of a safe. And it was so many things happening. But because, you know, you making that kind of money sometimes a day coming through, you just like, well, whatever. Because you don't know until the people come.
So that was a toxic relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did you break free from that toxic relationship?
Like a string.
Yeah. Well, he went to jail.
Wow.
So I believe that's how God, you know, removed that. Mm-hmm. Particular relationship.
So we talk about that, y'all, in our book, right? Yeah. Sometimes when we're not strong enough to do it for ourselves, things happen to break them away. And you be crying and weeping and you don't even understand God just saved you because you couldn't save yourself.
Nah, for real. And even through all of that, when he originally got arrested, he was sending, well, we got arrested together. This is the first time I got, well, it's actually second time I got in trouble, but the first federal case that I had. And we got arrested together, and I was bailed out immediately. And when I went to his arraignment, I watched on the screen. And the lawyer that I actually retained for him to get paid and got him an attorney to represent him, his argument was that he was visiting a friend from out of town because he was from New York, and he was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wow.
And my heart dropped because I could not believe that he is somebody that I loved or at least thought I did, right? That I had gotten engaged in this lifestyle because of that I was doing all of these things. And then when the man comes and the shit hits the fan, you like, you was just visiting a friend, ain't know what was going on.
Wow.
And then sent word back to me through other people that I should take the charge. I didn't have a record. And so because of that, you know, they're not going to give me any time. They found a gun, they found drugs. And I'm like, the gun is a mandatory minimum of 5 years. And it was a federal charge. It was a state charge at the time. And I was like, hell no. I'm not. These were your drugs. You had them in my house. This wasn't my shit. You need to man up and do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Finally, he did. And I thought that they were going to drop the case. And when I was at the court, they dropped the state charges. I was walking out the door and the feds were on the back and they picked up the case.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where did your brothers fit in all of this? Because sometimes, you know, I know when I went to school, all my brothers were at the school. Mm-hmm. So it gave me like a, I don't know, like this little confidence that I was always going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in all of this, where did they fit into this picture? Like in terms of like your backbone or somebody, did you share with one of them? Or?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
No, not, my family didn't know anything that I was involved in. I didn't want my brothers involved in anything that I was doing because they all had children. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want them to sacrifice themselves or that of their children. And so no one in my family knew who my brothers were. At least I thought was my street brothers. Right. So these guys I call my brothers, you know, but again, when shit hits the fan, your brothers ain't your brothers. You know, they're not around. Right. They don't have your back. And so, you know, you learn when you're in this, you know, everything is good when the money is there and everything is, you know, people around. When things are, it's very few. And what I will say back to what we talked about sisterhood, mm-hmm. it's my sisters that held me down. My friends held me down. Each time I got in trouble, my friends were the ones that were there. They were going on those visits. They would come every single time.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's why sisterhood is incredibly important.
I have a question. So now this was your street dude. That was a toxic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the first and the last?
No.
So did Mm-mm. this keep happening to you?
No, not in that way. But what I will say is that I was disconnected at that point, right? So it's trust, right? So when that happened, I would say that that changed my life in such a way that I didn't trust anyone. Because the person that I thought that I trusted the most did what he did in the way that he did. But then there was another relationship that I was in. So if I take that back to the time I was about 19 years old, I met a guy. He was much older than me. I thought he was, I knew he was older, but I didn't know how much older he was. And found out from another guy who was like, yeah, why you messing with that old ass dude? I'm like, what are you talking about? He ain't that old. He like asked him to see his ID. He was hating. But I did one day when he took me out to eat and he showed me his ID and I asked him why he lied. He was like, because you probably wouldn't talk to me. But he always showed up like a very mature guy. He still was in the street, you know, or whatever. And so, but he was always a gentleman, at least I thought. But the irony of this story, and this is probably going to be another, you know, I have so many of them. I have so many of them. The irony about this story was when, you know, we would sleep together every now and again, because I really wasn't attracted to him like that, but he was a good person, at least I thought. You know, was help paying my bills or doing all the things, you know, as a young woman with an older guy, what they do. And but when I was sleeping, I was like, but he, every time we had sex, we used a condom. So, you know, no problem, no big deal, right? So years go past, we stopped dating for like probably, I don't know, 16 years or so. And had reconnected. He had went away, came home, and we reconnected. And he asked me to take the condom off. And it just was like, what? Now, I'm sharing this to say I've had unprotected sex with people before. You know, I think we all have, right? So it's not that. And mind you, you know, and I've had sex with people without using a condom at all. If this is a keep it real show, you know, I think we all have, right? But in this particular relationship, that wasn't the case. So when he asked to take the condom off, it immediately alarmed me because I'm like, this is really weird. After all this time, why would he ask? So I asked him, well, you know, have you been tested? And he was like, tested for what? I'm like, tested for all the things, HIV, da-da-da. And he's like, yes. And I said, so what were the results? He was like, negative. Pin that. So I was like, all right, we have sex unprotected. You know, every month go by, whatever, and I get a common cold. So I'm sneezing, not feeling good. And he's like, you know, where are you at? I'm like, working. He's like, I need you to, he's lived in Maryland. He's like, I need you to come see me. And I'm like, for what? Like, I'm tired. I just got off. I don't feel like. He's like, no, I need you to come see me today. It's important. It's an emergency. So I go down and I go see him. He picks me up and he's quiet and he's driving me and he's not driving me in the same direction as the to his house. He's driving me in a whole nother direction. I'm like, where are you taking me? And he was like, to the doctor. Mind you, it's like late. It's almost like 7 o'clock. So I'm like, why are you taking me to the doctor? He's like, I want you to get tested. I'm like, tested for what? And he was like, HIV. I was like, why you want me to get tested for HIV?
What?
So he was like, because, you know, your symptoms, I said, my symptoms, I just got the flu. I'm sick. It ain't nothing. He was like, no. So he was, I was like, why are you asking me or taking me to a doctor to get tested for HIV? And he was like, because I have HIV.
What?
So I completely throw up. I mean, the first thing, my first body reaction was to vomit. So I vomit and.
Hey, ladies, it's your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis here. And I got something truly transformative to share with you today. As Black women, we know the struggle with hormonal imbalances all too well. Whether it's dealing with PMS or navigating the changes of menopause, let me tell you, finding hormone harmony was a game changer for me, and I'm excited to share why. Hormone harmony isn't just another supplement. It's a phenomenon, y'all. Picture this. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Yeah, you heard right. This stuff is flying off the shelf because it's changing lives. When it comes to our health, quality matters. Happy Mammoth, the company behind Hormone Harmony, is all about making women's lives easier. They use science-backed ingredients that actually work. No compromises, just results. So let's talk about adaptogens. That's the secret sauce in Hormone Harmony. These herbal extracts help our bodies adapt to stressors like hormonal changes, making them perfect for any woman experiencing imbalances. From hot flashes to low moods, Hormone Harmony has got your back, sis. But here's the real kicker. Feeling like yourself again. That's what women are saying in over 17,000 reviews of Hormone Harmony. And let me tell you, it's true. I'm finally feeling like me again, and it was worth every single penny. Now, here's the deal. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. So you know what to do, sis. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your bottle. Trust me, you'll thank me later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Then I smack him. That's the next. So he pulls the car over, and I'm like, what? Are you trying to say I gave you something? I was like, it's impossible. That's not the case. You're the only person I've been sleeping in. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And he was like, I said, well, when did you find out? And he was like, I knew. And I said, well, how long have you known? Guess.
Yo.
Years. Guess how long he's known. He knew at this point.
A few years?
Over 20 years.
What?
So he knew. The day he met me, he was HIV positive at that time. He had HIV for all that time. 20-something years. He had HIV. And so we go to the doctor. I get tested.
Whoa, so why would he ever tell you to take off the...
Listen.
So was he was trying to hurt
this
you.
This is what I asked him. So were you trying to kill me? You trying to make me stay with you because you're so in love or obsessed or whatever the case may be? I get to the doctor. I get tested. I don't have it, thank God. The doctor's telling me to keep get tested every 3 months. I do that.
First of all, what's your state of mind after that?
What do you mean? First of all, fear, thinking that obviously it'll come back up, right? Like, I slept with somebody who was positive, that I knew. Now, mind you, as I said, I've slept with other people unprotected and didn't know, right? But I slept with someone who told me that they were HIV positive. I talked to the doctor. The doctor said that he was undetectable. And I was asking, well, what does that mean? That, you know, his blood cell counts with this, and he was healthy and all that. And so it was very rare for him to be able to transfer, you know, it from someone else. But what he did, and he wouldn't tell the doctor that I didn't know, right? And at this time, I wasn't aware that that was real. It's attempted murder. So he could have actually went to prison for attempted murder if I would have pressed charges on him because of that, right? So I kept getting tested. So my mind, I was, and I'm sharing this part of the story again when we're thinking about love and about ourselves and how we protect our bodies and why that is so important. Because even people we think we know, we don't. You don't. It is important that you get tested when you sleep with anybody. Like, it is important. I don't care how long you know them, right? And so, you know, from there, I was in this kind of fog because now he's asking me not to tell anybody. So now you're asking me to hold your secret. Right. And now I have friends that he's known, some of my friends, you know, and I'm like scared because I don't know if this is going to pop up. Right. So I'm not saying anything at this point. I'm just going about life, waiting to get tested again, you know, making sure seeing what's happening. So my brain was in a fog, which led me to then, I said, getting caught up and making a poor decision to get back in the game because I was out of the game for 7 years at this time. Got a phone call like, you know, hey, what's up? Everything's good for my old connect. I wasn't really paying attention, you know, why would they be calling me after all this time? Ended up then going ahead, moving forward, getting, meeting with them. My friend says, strong story short, ended up finding myself caught in a federal drug sting operation. So the cartel set me up. I got pulled into an ongoing indictment.
Yo, you will never believe how crazy it is and how people set women up because they feel like we easy targets. So when they get jammed up with the feds and they got to talk, the first person that they talking on, sis, is us.
Right, and I was out. I had stopped selling drugs for 7 years at this point. I was completely out. And I was, you know, working. I was division chairperson at this time for Amtrak for New York and D.C. I had...
Division chair. Stop.
I had my own business. I wanted to open
another
business.
She threw another job in there.
Was.
She threw something else.
No, yeah, seriously. And I did this one, too, to start another business. And it was a sting operation. So when I got arrested, I was still getting tested. And the doctor inside was like, you don't need to get tested anymore. Like, it's been well over a year. You're okay. And I'll never forget when I was waiting to decide whether or not I was going to, you know, go to trial or what. My friends came to visit and I told them what happened because they knew them. And they were just like, oh, my God, like, how did you hold this to yourself for so long? But I started, like, through this healing journey. And I was like, your secret is making me sick. Why am I holding on to something that is not mine? And I told one of my very best friends, and come to find out, he had been dating her cousin. And she told her cousin, and he had wrote me. I was inside, and he was asked me, why did I tell somebody? I said, oh, so I'm supposed to hold your secret forever? And I'm glad I told her, because who knows what you could have done to her. Right? Like, you think that just be you, as long, what I do know about HIV is as long as you are, if you have it, you have it, right? There are times that they say that one, we haven't found a cure yet. We know that. And so while it may be undetectable and things of that nature, if you actually have it, then you can transmit it, like just like herpes and HPV and other things. And so, you know, for him to still move about life and sleep with women and not let them know is terrible. And so I would say that in the middle of my journey and learning all the other things about loving myself and what it was that I needed to do for myself and why I was still protecting someone who hurt me, right?
So bad.
Right? And hurting me in the sense of emotionally, mentally. Thank God, because God had another plan for me, that I did not contract HIV. And who's to say, you know, the people who live with it and fine, but that wasn't my road. And I'm grateful to God for that. But I also know that, you know, there are times that I do share that story because I want women to understand.
I've known you for so long now, and I never knew that story. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get a little emotional now, too, because it's just like a lot, and I see you tearing up over there. So when people think of incarcerated women, they often look at us like we're scum or trash or the statistics show that over 50% of us have suffered from some form of abuse or trauma. And as you're spilling it out, right, you said wanting to be accepted, wanted to be loved, wanted to fit in with the black girls who were looking at you like, huh, I ain't sure, right, to these hood dudes that, you know, embrace you with open arms, so you just so happy to be down and that they loving on you, but they not really loving on you. So you go from one thing to a whole nother thing, and then the hurt and the pain, and people don't understand that heartbreak is a real thing when you're a lover. Like, if you playing, it don't even mean nothing. It's like, okay, girl, he did. But when you love how we love, and Tara, I know you a lover too. When you love like that and you get hurt from the person that you'll die for. Because we'd be so into this thing that we like all or nothing. It don't even, because even after homeboy told you he had the HIV. Yeah. You feel me?
Word.
Yo, like, you not even upset with him. You still holding on to him and you still protecting him even when he didn't protect you.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Even when he didn't love you.
Yeah.
You still was loving him more than you was loving yourself.
That's right. That's right.
It's so crazy.
It is crazy. And it is something when you get to, I guess, you know, the age that I am now and the journey that I have traveled that allows me to walk in the way that I do and why I do what I do and why people don't know what we have been through. You know, they're like, you don't look like what you've been through. You know, these are some of the, I mean, I just gave maybe two highlights of some that I've been through. I haven't given them all, you know.
But it's a cycle.
It is.
It's a cycle, because once you're in one toxic relationship and you don't identify that thing and crush it and really deal with you and really build your self-esteem up and really set those boundaries, you're just going to be on the hamster wheel.
That's
going
right.
From a different face, a different person, but more toxicity.
That's right. And you don't, and it, while you can identify it, because clearly I'm smart, right? Like, clearly. You know what's going on in your life. It is this thing, because when you are also a lover, when you're an empath, when you struggle, I struggled with, I was the girl that always had, and because I had that opportunity and I had things, I always felt like I had to be around certain people. I had to accept certain people. I had to take from certain types of people, because it was almost like I was unworthy to be blessed with what my parents worked so hard to give me, right? Because most of the people, as I grew and I learned, most people didn't have the opportunities that I had. And I felt guilty about that. I felt guilty that I was privileged. And I didn't realize that that was a blessing and that my parents worked incredibly hard so I didn't have to experience the things that they did. But yet I put myself in certain circumstances because I was trying so hard not to be that privileged girl. And some of my friends, from cousins, my closest friends, they'd be like, you know, we would always wonder why you would be over there. Why would you be hanging on that block? Why would you be around those people? Because we were wanting to be like you. And like, I couldn't even see that. You know, I couldn't see those friends of mine, right? That were like telling me, Topeka, like, why are you doing, you know, or why are you around them? Why are you messing with him? You know, like, why are you messing with the guy that you got to rent the car for? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, but it was this need for me to feel needed and wanted and loved. And unfortunately, I was not emotionally intelligent enough at the time to understand and identify that that was what was not
love. But it's also your purpose. And I know I'm attracted to you. And we'll go back because we got to take you out to the prison because that was crazy. But I know I'm attracted to you, but then we have similarities. And then this is the other piece. You was attracted to those people because those were the people that you were called to save and help. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So let's get back to your purpose. Because even me, right, I was attracted as well. And my parents couldn't understand, like, yo, what is going on? And my baby father, you know, lived on the fifth floor of the Roosevelt houses. And I'm stepping over the piss in the elevator. And I'm excited about the piss in the elevator. And they're like, yo, what is going on? But I really didn't realize that God really called me to help break the bonds of poverty.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Some of the things that I do and where I'm equipped to be and now looking at your life and helping the formerly incarcerated women and breaking the bonds of poverty. Sometimes we got this equipment.
That's right.
We got this equipment and we know that we can use it and it works. Think about how many people's lives you changed your dudes, right? Now look at how we flipping it, but we changing the lives of women and people. And you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so there was nothing wrong with you. You was right, right, but you just didn't understand purpose.
Well, true. And you
at the
realize,
time.
That's 100. And you realize that in that, right, in that pain, again, at my age and where I am and the journeys that I've traveled, I realized I had to go through that
you
in order to be
had
where
to
I am.
Do it.
Right. I understand. And it's like every single step along the way, I can speak to that. Why I can speak when I'm asked to speak on certain things, I can talk about this. When somebody wants me to talk about reproductive justice and healthcare, I can talk about that. When somebody wants me to talk about banking and finance, I can talk about that. When someone wants me to talk about incarceration and conditions of confinement, I can talk about that. I can do it because I've lived these experiences and I can speak authentically from that. I'm not just talking based on something I've read. These are things that I have lived. And I think that's where we talk about credible messengers. That's what we talk about changing lives. That's why now I can look at those same sisters that still try to cause harm to me. And I can still extend love, but understand that forgiveness does not always necessarily mean reconciliation. Mm-hmm. That I can forgive you for the harm that you caused because you may not have known what you've done. But it doesn't mean that I need to keep you close because I know that if you don't know what you've done, you have the propensity to do it again. And so I know that now God uses me in a very different way because of those lived experiences in order to change the lives of so many people.
Come on.
That's exactly what I was just sitting here thinking. Like, I mean, not just being motivated by that, but like taking all of these lessons as a stepping stone for your own self. And I think like just creating this so people can freely talk about this. Because sometimes when you're at home and you're thinking about what you're going through, just because someone else is not going through that, it seems like 10. But when you hear someone else's story and what they have overcome, it just motivates you. Like, what am I complaining for? Why don't I flip this, add some sugar to it, make lemonade, and step up from that? Mm-hmm. I mean, just sitting here thinking about that and how motivated I am, just hearing.
That's what's up.
Thank you. I know that what I've learned through my journey, because even people would say, well, you only did 3 years in prison. I did 10. You did my own grace to tell me I only did a weekend based on the time that she did. But what I learned through that is that none of our experiences should ever be diminished. Mm-hmm. Right? So while I may have been through some experiences, there may be a sister who's been through even more. It doesn't mean that mine are less hard.
But the other piece
to it,
right?
To use it, many of us don't.
Yes.
And so I can boldly talk about my truth because, one, I want it to help someone else to understand that, you know, love yourself exactly where you are, and that you have the full autonomy to create the life that you want to live. Period. It doesn't matter.
Period.
You can do it no matter what. Like, we came out of prison. I had to start over. Everything. Every single thing that I've done, I have earned. I have worked hard for, and I've done it. And I'm grateful to God for opening the path, for connecting me to the right people, for doing the things, right? For being able not to have, need my mom to help me with some, you know, that I have been able to rebuild my life in a way that now I have choices. Because often what we see with sisters, especially around the women, the work that I do with domestic violence and being a survivor, that we put ourselves in situations, or we keep ourselves there because we don't feel that we have choices. But we always do, right? And so, you know, I just want, or I'm hopeful that through this podcast, and I, you know, I laid the ground out, you know, very boldly, because I want people also to understand that, you know, you may look at us and you see, you know, the sparkles, but you don't know why we sparkle. And when we share the truth of all of the pain that we have been through and the trauma that we have experienced and that we still work through each and every day, because it doesn't go away overnight, that smile is from deep within. And that smile is because of God and understanding what we have been brought through. And that if you understand that whatever moment that you're in right now, God is using it for your good.
Come on. I think we need to hold hands and have a kumbaya on that one. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Sis, this was so good.
No.
And we didn't even get to our story, because that's what we were doing.
When I came through the door, she said, I'm so proud of you. And this is as I'm trying to read all your Forbes article, right? I'm trying to read as much as I can to get to know this woman. And this was nothing like I thought it would be. So I can say, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
That's what's up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, friends. It's your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis, and I have a special announcement. We are finally opening up the Black Women's Lives Matter community. So what does that mean? In real time, we can fellowship with you. We have this platform that we're giving to you for absolutely free. And it's a place where you can learn from other Black women just like you. And we're going to be learning real things, speaking to experts about finances, relationships, fashion, makeup, parenting, you name it, we got it in the community. It's a place that we can fellowship and also heal. We're also going to be having therapy in the community. There's a lot of things that we need to talk about to get off our chest, you know, and we're going to do it in a safe place where we can learn from experts about how to maximize our potential and become the best us that we can possibly be. So what does this mean? It's time to click the link in our bio and join today. It is absolutely free. It costs you nothing. And it will grow you so much, I promise you. So meet me in the community. You get to actually work with me this year. I'm going to be doing some one-on-ones. I'm going to be doing some group work. And it's all about leveling up. Meet me in the community. I'll see you soon. And y'all already know what it is. It's going down.
It was spirit-led. And it's a healing journey. And we talked about it, but I'm going to have her come back and talk about it a little more. I'm going to just say this. Me and this girl was like this. And it was something about her. I mean, we prayed together, exchanged intimate information with one another. And we were so close and got broken in a broken space. Because we was around a bunch of broken women. And I was doing a lot. I was helping people write books, helping people get free. She came on my bed. Like, even all of the stuff that she's doing now, I remember us speaking about it on a bunk bed in prison. And we was like, yo, she's like, faces of women in prison. We going to do this. And I'm like, yup. And it's just so crazy how God would have it. And I wasn't speaking to her. I was mad at Topeka.
We wasn't speaking at each other.
Okay. So this happened while you guys were incarcerated. You guys stopped talking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You're going to be the interviewer next. We stopped. Topeka hurt me.
Okay, so we're here. You see her in the hallway. You love her. Mm-hmm. She takes you under her wing. Mm-hmm. What happened?
You know, I think What I really think that happened, and I don't even think we really even talked about this since we really reconnected, because I reached out after I received the pardon and we were doing some work around remission. Some sisters reached out, and the project that we were doing, Jamila benefited, would benefit
greatly.
Because,
honey,
I'm
going to just tell her this part. I seen the phone. I'm like, because I didn't know the number. I don't know her number. And I seen, when I was leaving out the airport, and she said, this is Topeka. I'm looking at the phone like, honey, I was about to click that thing so hard. Because you know how we be in our feelings?
Yes.
And then look, at sometimes we in our feelings and we in the way. Okay. But she quickly got to the point, well, I think I have something that could benefit you. And she started talking about that $15 million restitution I had, and that she had a way to get that thing cleared. And I was like, yes, Topeka, how are you?
Uh-huh.
Let's speak a little further. What's going on? And that's really how it started. But go ahead.
So I had reached out to Tamika.
Tamika Mallory.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I asked her for her number.
Okay.
Because I said, I knew that they were close, and I knew Tamika before I went to prison. And I said, look, I need her number. I got something that I think she could benefit from. And who I have grown to be. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know what? This is something I know that could help this sister. And I know this sister. And I know that she's good. So later, for all that bullshit, I'm going to reach out to her. Because I cannot do a campaign that would not have her involved in this. Mm-hmm. Especially where I know it will change her life.
Okay.
Right? So that's where I reached out.
I'm grateful
out,
for that.
Now, the back, the why. I think what happened was I didn't understand Jamila at the time, right? So as she said, I would go to her because she was always up. Jamila had a Pepsi. She would drink Pepsi, cases of Pepsi. And she would be always up writing all the time. She really was the first person who opened my eyes to having a clear understanding from academia about incarceration. So she gave me the new Jim Crow book and told me to read it. And that's how I was able to put like words, understanding, and data to what I was feeling and what I was seeing based on my journey, right? So I said, look, you know, there's this idea, Faces, I want, you know, I think I need you to write something up for me, because that's all she did was write. And she said, okay, I got you, sis. So Jamila, as we know, you ask her to do something, she is going to get it done. Period.
I don't even remember this part, but okay, go ahead.
Right. So this is what I think that happened, right?
But that's dope.
No, and she gets it done. So she calls this meeting with everybody. You remember that? You called everybody into the chapel.
Okay. Was this when Lauryn Hill was with us?
She wasn't here yet.
Okay.
See,
because she came back into the chapel with us, too. We had a Lauryn Hill chapel meeting, too.
Yes, but
that people don't know about that. We got to talk about one day. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead.
Chapel meeting on another episode.
So we had the chapel meeting, and we were putting this, you know, stuff together in order to get women to come and share their stories. Because I felt like if people saw the faces and heard the voices of sisters inside, that women wouldn't be here. So this is something we need to fight from inside. And it was in that there were another sister who you wrote, helped write her book and publish her book.
Mm-hmm. And so this was the calendar. Was you on the calendar?
No,
you wasn't on the calendar because you didn't have restitution.
I didn't have restitution.
So, Tara, I created a calendar in prison with all these women that had, like, big restitution. So that was behind bars. Okay, go ahead.
And then there was work that was done around it. They were putting together all the data about men versus women. I worked at Unicor, and I typed it all up because I was the lead clerk. Like, so we were doing a project from inside, right?
I remember that.
But nonetheless, I believe that what happened was this sister came to me and shared that she felt she was being taken advantage of. And instead of me, again, here is a sister who, you know, came from less. Mm-hmm. Had a different lived experience, and I'm feeling like I gotta help her. Mm-hmm. And still, me understanding who Jamila was, I should have, and I could take accountability, I should have had a conversation with her about that, opposed to just trying to help what I felt was protect and realize it was just manipulation in the end. And so from there, I think it was this issue with this one particular sister that...
Because I didn't have another issue, right? So me and Topeka was cool. Topeka was like the ace. I enjoyed Topeka because she was like a breath air. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I came in. I didn't really deal with people. I had a lot of power in the prison because of my job. Okay. So I was the clerk over recreation. So basically, in my particular position, it's all the clerks in prison. Like, women's prison is different than men's prisons, right? Guards run the prisoners, the women, they trust us. So they let the clerks run the prison. So I'd be the clerk of the different areas. So I was the clerk of recreation. I controlled the recreation in the building. I controlled the classes folks was taking. And then I had a relationship with the counselor who was over the whole prison so I could get people moved, whatever. Mm. So I really had a lot of power in this prison. And I really didn't mess with nobody because I was wild funny because I didn't really trust people. But I trusted Topeka. Topeka was my girl. So, and you couldn't, the counselor was like, you better watch her. I said, uh-uh. Don't talk about Topeka. Mm-hmm. She is good. We going to do this thing. We good. So we was rocking, you know what I'm saying, her first weekend. So people don't know, like, it's like the house nigga, field nigga when it comes to prison, right? The house, people, you get, you got a 10-minute-a-day job. You could chill and relax and do, you know, the quarters, clean the quarters. Mm-hmm. But the field, Negroes, oh, they got you out there working, sweating, sugar. You doing some real hard labor. So I'm like, oh, no, she comes in the house. She's in the house with us. Brought on in the house. She had the, you know, the fluffy job, and she went out and went to Unicorn because she wanted to do something, you know, different. But she actually, Topeka was always a hustler. She had like 3-4 jobs in a prison, but that's another story. Yeah. That's another day. Yeah. But you couldn't tell me nothing about this girl. Okay. This was my sister. This was the one, right? Because I learned from her. Just like I might have taught her about the new Jim Crow, she taught me about social media. She was fresh from the street. She explained to me, yo, you got to get up to Instagram. I knew MySpace. So she was putting me on, and I was so grateful. And so this one young lady, I was an author. I was writing books. So I helped this girl write her book to get free. And ultimately, her writing her book and being able to tell her story got her free, right? Because she ended up getting a clemency.
She got clemency from Obama, President Obama.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So long story short, my parents paid to get this book produced for her. Right? She didn't have any money. There was nothing for us to gain at the time. We took a risk on her and we did this book. And then she went to her and it was like, came back like, I'm trying to steal her story or take advantage of her. Mm-hmm. And I was so hurt because I cared for this girl too. I'm fighting for her to get her freedom. Her book ultimately went into the hands of her judge who respected her from the book and read because we was able to clearly outline the story in a way that people could understand that she wasn't culpable in the way that the judge sentenced her to a 30-year sentence.
Yeah, I mean, she had a 19, I think, at that time.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Oh, correct.
My whole bag is full of chills. Oh, my God.
Okay. Yeah. So she did 17 when I met her. And I did what I needed to do because by the time you came along, right? So... And I helped this girl with this book, and I gave her everything I had, and I'm pushing for my sisters, and I love, and I'm loving on these people, right? And she hurts the shit out of me. And not only is she hurt me, she's standing with Topeka. So it's like Topeka becomes the advocacy clerk, you know, the rep. Now they leveling up on me, right? After my parents put out their bread, after I wrote this book, and I'm killing myself to make sure she gets free, now I'm the bad guy, and I'm the... And so I couldn't even fight with Topeka. I couldn't even defend myself because I was so hurt. I'm like, yo, I love you so much, girl. Why would you hurt me like this? And she's not meaning to hurt me. Now I see. She's meaning to protect somebody else because she's thinking, well, maybe she is doing whatever she...
She came to me crying. And, you know, she... And here's the thing. When you're in those moments, and again, I take full accountability. I believed her. And it wasn't that Jamila ever showed me a side of her at that time that would have indicated that she would do something like that. What it was this young lady came so broke. She was already broken. But when she came to me in the way that she did, I just... you know, the advocate that I am internally was like, okay, so what do we do and how do we make this right? And I didn't understand based on all, I didn't even know all the back story. I didn't know that she had, you know, helped to write the book. I knew that the book was published and everything through her company. And I knew that she wasn't, you know, taking any money from her for it. And I knew that there was an agreement that once so many books were sold that she would get, like any other publisher kind of author relationship would be. But I did not know all of the intricacies that had happened. And all I saw was this girl, because, you know, I mentioned emotional intelligence. So this girl who had already served, now at this point about 19 years, who said she was being taken advantage of, and I was just like, no, well, we can't have that, right? Yeah. And so I think we may have had one, if I remember correctly, we were walking down the hall with something, we might have worked quickly, but after that, we just stopped speaking to each other. And we just stopped speaking to each other.
It wasn't no fight. Yeah, it was the communication or whatever was said. And it just was like, but then that's the other piece to it. You know, this was my sister. And if it was a dude, I'm sure we would have had the communication. We would have fought it out and we would have been back together or whatever. But in this instance, I was like, what? You crossed me, you lost me. And I went on my way. You know, and at the end of the day, I got hurt. I've been hurt my whole life. And so for me, I have to put boundaries up on relationships because it's that energy keeps coming back to me. So I just protected myself. Okay. And my protection was my boundary. Don't talk to me. And the girl, I stopped speaking to her too. And I just went home and everything I told this one I was going to do, I did it. But guess what? Everything she told me she was going to do, she did it too. So we now bring us up to present, right? We both started climbing up on the ladder of advocacy people that now have gained worldwide recognition, both of us, right? For the work that we do. And people will say her name and faces. I'll be like, don't say nothing. It is so crazy because we both were friends with Karen Hunter. Karen Hunter, you know, she has, what's the Urban View. On Sirius XM, big deal. And you know, folks will say her name and I'll be like, I didn't kill her, but I was like, I don't mess with her. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until I got that phone call from her, and I still had mad guards up, because I'm like, yo, what's your, you know, I'm in my head. And then finally, I just was like, you know what? She doing her thing. She could actually benefit me. She could actually bring me something. Whereas all the other people just get. And it's so crazy because very shortly after I got with her, it took me 5 years to create the Voices of Consequences Enrichment Series for incarcerated women. And these are healing tools, y'all. So same kind of healing tools that we give into the masses. This is the work. This is the work, Tara, that we did from behind bars to really get this thing together because we didn't want to be back in this place anymore. We hit the bottom. So we said, you know what? We're going to work on us so we never, ever get to see the bottom again. And it took me, I ain't never did nothing for 5 years. It took me 5 years and I completed this thing and I met this girl who I wasn't talking to, who pride let me be like, hey, I don't want nothing to do with her. Don't say her name. And this woman brought me into a situation that now has changed my life. She brought me through her relationships and her connections in front of the director of the Bureau of Prisons. And she was invited to a round table where she brought me as her special guest. I wouldn't have been eligible to get into the private round table. But she made it her business to make sure that I had a seat at the table. And through her giving me that seat at the table, I knew what to do. You see, now the one thing about it is she had to do too much for me. Because I came with my books, baby. I had everything ready. I was like, sister, she gonna go? Yes. So, and I was able to present my books. And guess what? Directly following that meeting, I was able, through this lady right here that's sitting next to you, to get my books that took me 5 years to write in prison that were my healing roadmap that I used, right? It got approved by the director of the Bureau of Prisons as curriculum, approved curriculum, that women now get time off their sentences. Come on and tell me God ain't good.
I mean, this literally goes back to when you say understanding, recognizing, you know, signs of toxic relationships, right? It's the lack of communication that you guys went that long without
speaking about it.
Speaking about it, going without loving on your friend, going without talking to your friend. Some, you know, the fact that you guys had so much in common, the fact that you guys, the bright light, you had to turn off, and it took all of these years.
Yeah, it was a long time.
But now it's my friend now, Shug. Yes. And I love you, friend.
God. I love you too.
I love you.
I love you too.
So we're gonna be committed to have that communication, and I told her that because now we are actually involved in this whole.
Well, now I'm involved.
I know that's right.
She said. What you gotta say? She said.
Our accountability partners. Yes. Because in just a short period of time, we've been able to do amazing things. We're embarking upon a film company to tell the stories of not just formerly incarcerated people, but just people in general. And we're using our connections and our contacts and our gifting to glorify God in a way that can help people to change, to heal, and to become their greater self.
Good stuff, right?
So is this, was this conversation good? Baby, so I love you more.
I mean, this was amazing. I mean, the both of you. I mean, just beyond going through so much to take that and motivate so many people. This is not my story. It's very different, and I'm so motivated. I'm like, how do I get that same energy? I'm going to take from this, you know, and still from this. Pack it in.
You can have a group hug. Group hug. Give me that to the group hug. Got the mic. So, y'all, this concludes our episode of I Love Me More podcast. Stay tuned. Much more to come.
On the next episode of I Love Me More podcast.
I was born into the movement. My mother was Native American activist, Juanetta Lone Wolf. She was a part of the American Indian movement. So I literally was born in a march.
A fellow activist, change maker. She was perfect to bring to the table. So I want y'all to give it up for my friend, Yanaz.
A friend of mine, Romaine Brisbane, was murdered by police in Phoenix, Arizona. And I just was like, oh, I'm putting this mic down and I'm just gonna go full-fledged into organizing and fighting against police brutality.
What is your health today?
I'm at stage 4 lung cancer. My chest and back was hurting and I was like, why is my chest and back hurting? I was in the shower and God put it in my spirit, you have cancer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.